Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
We have made it to the point in the week where Marty can, in fact, deliver a news dump. Oh, hi. Yeah. What have you got for us? It's Friday. You may as well get started early.
Okay, well, this is not going to be a news dump, but because I know how much you like music, Duffer, and I'm more of a movie guy myself, so I combined the two of them last night and watched the Back to Black, the Amy Winehouse movie that's been out, and what a fantastic, unbelievable movie, and I didn't know the whole story right there, so this is not, but it's a Friday, and, you know, who knows, people are looking to do something, you know, family-wise over the weekend, maybe you sit down, you know, grab dinner, put a movie on. So it was pretty amazing. So I would definitely recommend it to those that like those biopic type thing. And it was that actress, I don't remember her name, but she was amazing in portraying Amy Winehouse in that movie.
Kind of sad, though.
Very sad. very troubling. Again, did not know all the story behind. Yeah. I knew obviously she had passed away at 27, which was, you know, very early. Mm-hmm. With some of the issues that, you know, that she had dealt with, but, you know, the passion, the love, the emotions through it all, her rise right in London, and then being told, hey, you know what, you're not ready for the States yet, and then she delayed that, and it just, she said she had to feel the music, like. You know, it's funny because I think musicians and professional athletes to a certain extent, you know, can have these things that are similar. There's players in hockey and in all sports that they have to feel the game. They have to live through it, right? They have to ride the emotions of winning and losing and all of that. And for me as a hockey player, I was the total opposite. I need to be consistent. I cannot get on that roller coaster of emotion or I will not perform my best. And I'm sure there's musicians that are like that too, that have to be consistent and delivered everything the same way all the time. And others are very much the highs and the lows. She was a high and low type of person. And it was definitely interesting to see how that was portrayed. And there was some, you know, like any type of movies like that, there are some moments that are probably enhanced for the movies, but there were some moments that were really accurate as well. When you go research it afterwards, you find out that was very accurate.
Yeah, there are so many similarities between any performer and the athletes that we talk about on a regular basis. And yeah. Despite best intentions to avoid the roller coaster that you speak of, there are just so many external factors and influences and decision makers and opinion. You know, like that's the all I can think of with performers is just like how quickly you can go from the biggest thing in showbiz to not at all, right? And that is so. Just like athletes that we talk about all the time, right? Like
you, well, go you put an album out, you don't know what that's going to be. Like you put your blood, sweat, and tears into it and you release it. You have no idea. Just like you may have worked hard all summer long, have been on the ice, been in the gym, and then you show up to the first month of the season, zero goals, one assist in 12 games, and you're supposed to be a 40-goal scorer, right? Like,
and you're supposed to stay even keel. And, you know, what, like you're saying, like, try to be even, like, it's pretty hard when the criticism gets amped up that quickly, you know, coming off of your best summer of training, right? Like, so these are the realities. And then you couple all of this, you know, kind of storytelling about whether it's a hockey, in our case, hockey players and performers. And then last night was kind of when the world combines the two in the form of the ESPYs. And, you know, I'm disappointed in myself over the years for not staying true to what I believe, which is I tend to take away so much from the ESPYs. I just haven't taken enough time in recent years to watch them in their entirety. And I'm so glad that I just happened to turn it on right at the right time last night.
Yep.
And the Arthur Ashe Award and Steve Gleason's story. And we have been blessed by the great storytellers of the world to share with us people's experiences, their courageous attempts to battle through. And we have witnessed those in our very own backyard in Western New York and globally. But Marty, watching the story first and then seeing Gleason actually on stage with his son after Drew Brees introduced him. Now, Gleason was with the Saints coming out of Hurricane Katrina and played a pivotal role in their reemergence and the city's reemergence and their love and the power of sport and how it can elevate a community at the most difficult time. And the one resonating line over and over and over last night in the storytelling of Steve Gleason was, "I'm still here." Mm-hmm. 13 years after an ALS diagnosis that typically takes someone within the first 3 years.
Yeah.
I can't even do it justice to compartmentalize everything that we witnessed on that stage last night. But if you started the show talking about looking at someone's life story and their legacy and sitting down with your kids and family and watching something this weekend, I can only implore you as a parent to somehow find a way to convince your kids to take 10 minutes and watch the buildup from Brees, the story of Gleason, and his speech on stage last night.
Yeah.
It is nothing short of the most courageous thing I've ever seen. And, you know, probably shouldn't have started looking at the comments after, but there was actually some truth and honesty, and I'll assume from both sides of the political fence here, was that leadership in all aspects of our world, especially this country, needs to take a good look at how people like Steve Gleason live and figure out a way to make where we live better.
Well, you've well said, and Gleason, I mean, if you go back to the mid-2000s, right, you talked about Katrina, the first game back in New Orleans, he has that block punt. He's a, you know, he was a hardworking special teams guy, right? And those are, we've talked about here in Buffalo, followed the Bills forever. You know, our good friend Steve Tasker, you know, is one of the special teams all time, like, legends when we talk about it. But that those guys, they work for everything every day to stay on the roster. They are like borderline players that could be cut at any moment. They have a spot on the special teams. And Gleason did that. He played for a long time. And you talk about having to battle ALS for 13 years. It was just a few years back where Boyer Salming, after a short, you know, battle with ALS, less than 2 years, passed away. And, you know, when he showed up at the Leafs game and was at center ice and couldn't speak because ALS took that away. And, you know, it was very emotional. And we all see these moments of courage through adversity in a lot of athletes that we grew up watching or we've idolized or we supported over the years. And this moment at the ESPYs last night by Steve Gleason was amazing. You know, Dawn Staley, who did an amazing job coaching in women's basketball this past year and for a while had an amazing moment as well of when speaking, you know, it's not just about hate and support and this, it's about just speaking the truth and from your heart. And she had an amazing moment as well. So yeah, the ESPYs, which just like you, I kind of have not followed through on watching the ESPYs a whole lot over the last little bit, but I, you know, laying in bed last night, strolling through social media and all these moments were popping up on my social media, you know, timeline. And it made me to just maybe spend even an hour just going back, listening to a lot of the speeches and the awards that were given out at the ESPYs last night.
And the technology that allowed Steve to communicate the way he did.
Yeah.
Is incredible. It's through his eyes and the advancement of all, you know, software, computers. I mean, it's just, it's really hard to believe that he was able to communicate the way he did. And you think of how far we've come in allowing people to overcome And this just all comes back to when you decide to open yourself up to help, you can maybe never truly know where your kindness, your dollars end up. And the Gleason family alone, through his ongoing courage to not give in to this, if I'm remembering it correctly, within the story, raised, is it 40 million for others in similar situations to be able to take advantage of the technology that continues to improve? To, you know, like, this is, it's one thing to make a donation, but it's another thing to truly understand the power of it and where it can go. And I don't know if I've ever seen a better example than Steve last night. It was truly remarkable. So congratulations to the ESPN family, the ESPYs, for showcasing not only Steve, but the best of humankind within the sports world.
But so here's the interesting thing, because for me, the ESPYs, it used to be about the athletes and who's the best athlete in football and hockey and whatnot. And I think it's gone in a different way now. It's recognizing, you know, all of those that are having leadership roles and adversity and battling through a lot of that. And I think that's even more powerful, because at the end of the day, Connor McDavid wins the NHL Player of the Year. He was third in hard voting. He wasn't even on the Lindsay vote. Like, you know, he wasn't even one of the Lindsay nominees. So you're thinking, okay, are the actual awards, when you look at best NHL player, best NFL player, best college basketball player, whatever, is it matter? It's an award show. But I think that we've seen now with the Courage Award, the Leadership Award, everything that they have makes this show a much deeper, a much more engaged award ceremony than just picking a winner. Because the winners every year we can debate, like, this one shouldn't have won, this one should. But there's no debating as to how deserving those that got these very emotional awards are to have been on stage and been accepting those awards.
So check out ESPN social channels, obviously, or pretty much anyone you follow in sports. I assume there's going to be so much sharing, as there should be, and hopefully not just in this 24 hours, obviously. Share our little bit here on Sabres Live as well. But so to the ice, and by the way, Shayna Goldman, it is Friday, so she'll be here at the bottom of the hour, so we look forward to that.
Well, I don't know if she'll be here at the
bottom
of
the hour. Oh, no, she'll be here, because Alcaraz won already, so she
doesn't have to be. No, but now she's going to watch Djokovic and cheer against him.
It'll be so early on there, we won't even make a dent in Wimbledon programming. Yeah, but no, so she'll give us a little insight into her most recent fact-finding mission, which is the future of Draisaitl in Edmonton. But you know, The Athletic and everyone else, obviously, it's created an awful lot of content in wake of free agency and as the dust settles and the projections to next year and things like that. And the one thing that you and I have not spent a lot of time talking about, and I think it's also very representative of the world we live in hockey now, which is far fewer. I suppose it can change from year to year, but the nature of hockey now is to get your RFAs done well in advance, right? So we don't see that many hanging, you know, like superstars awaiting that next deal in the summertime as young players. They are often so locked up. You needn't look any further than Buffalo Sabres and think of the business they've taken care of in recent years to make sure that Thompson and Cousins and Dahlin don't find themselves in this situation, right? So at the end of it all, though, maybe it takes the fun out of having our annual conversation about who would you offer sheet in the NHL right now, because the list is small. So my guess is we're going to have a lot of overlap if we did a back and forth like we did, probably back in May, when it came to like, who would you sign in unrestricted free agency, or who's a trade target right now that you think would be a good fit for the Sabres. So as per usual, I defer to your greatness, your experience, and your I don't know, curiosity, I suppose, when it comes to who you would want to offer sheet around the league.
Okay, well, I'm going to start with the one that I've said I want to offer sheet, I want to trade for him, I want to do everything.
To start with a Q?
I start with a Q. So it's Quentin Byfield of the Los Angeles Kings. Look, Quentin Byfield's 21 years old. He can play center and left wing. Oh, look at that. We could have an opening on the left wing of Thompson and Tuck this year. So could you see if you had these three big imposing figures, right? And I'm not just saying for the Sabres to offer sheet Quentin Byfield. I'm saying like anybody in the National Hockey League that is looking at, hey, how can we maybe get a player like Quentin Byfield? He didn't have arbitration rights. So he's not one that by filing for arbitrations would take him off the offer sheet route. He is one that's allowed to be offer sheeted. And maybe that would make the LA Kings job easy for a team to say, let's offer sheet Quentin Byfield. Let's negotiate with him. And then the LA Kings say, thank you very much, just like Sebastian Aho and the Carolina Hurricanes said, thank you very much to the Montreal Canadiens. But 20 goals last year, 35 assists, 55 points, and most of those goals were early in the season where he had a really strong October, November, December before the coaching change, which saw Todd McLellan on the way out. And then there was some adjustment for Quentin Byfield, but I think Quentin Byfield would be the number one on my list right now because, I mean, you look at if
but what
you decided
would his value
to go...
be? Because I don't think a lot of people listening and or watching right now would be wowed from a distance by his numbers. Yes, his draft status, age, and future outlook project well, but it is a major projection right now if you were ever venturing into offer sheet territory, correct?
Well, if and offer sheets have these different tiers, right? So if you're at 2.3 million to 4.5, it's a second round pick compensation. So you have to think, okay, would you be willing to give up a second round pick as in a trade for Quentin Byfield? That's a no-brainer. It's a yes. Okay, would you be willing to give up a first and a third? I'd say yes. Okay, are you willing to give up a first, second, and a third?
What's that compensation?
Well, that's 6.8 to 9.1.
So that's the window that he falls into. If you're
that's
following
exactly
the lead
how you
of
gotta
Dylan
look at
Cousins,
it.
Tage Thompson, et cetera. Even though he doesn't have nearly the resume of Thompson, who was blossoming from a goal-scoring standpoint when he got his deal, right?
Absolutely. So I look at it has to be between 6.87 and 9.1 because you have to put the number high enough that the LA Kings may say, we don't want to go that far. We'd rather take the first, second, and third, right? Like you have to, if you offer sheeted Quentin Byfield, if you talk to their agent, you agreed to a $5.5 million contract over the next 5 years, let's see. I mean, the LA Kings are going to say, thank you very much. You made our job a lot easier. We're going to sign him to the offer sheet and we're done, right? So you got to go at $6-7 million a year to make it where the LA Kings would have to really think about it.
They're never going to really think about it, in my opinion. They're going to match it regardless. Give me a number where they wouldn't match it.
Okay, so right now, when you look at the LA Kings, they have $9.1 million available under the cap. They have to sign Arthur Kaliev.
No, they don't.
Well, they don't have to sign him. They can trade him. They can let him sit on the sideline. They can say, go back to play wherever you want to. They have to sign Byfield. They have to not really. There's a guy named Jordan Spence on the back end. It's not going to cost him much. So I think to squeeze the LA Kings, you'd probably have to get in the $8 million range for them to say, no, we're not doing it. You think higher?
Mm-hmm. I think it would have to be. It would have to be. Just under the 11.45 threshold. I think teams would be willing to give up two firsts.
I'm not paying Quentin Byfield $11 million right now on an offer sheet. But yeah, okay. That's when they would think about it.
Okay, but if you gave him 11.4 and not 11.45, you're giving up two firsts, a second, and a third. Like, seriously, big whoop. It's a top three pick. Like, It's literally nothing to get the guy. The only thing you're doing is squeezing LA in this situation. My question to you is, what do you project Byfield to be So therefore, it's the other way of asking, could he ever live up to the money based on future cap projections, percentage of team salary that he would be eating up in that process? Like, what do you think Byfield's going to become? Because I think this is a great place to start in this discussion, because you're going on the youngest age end of the spectrum with the most unknown, I think, of a top pick right now.
I think Quentin Byfield, to me, is a 35 goals, 50 assists, 85 to 90 point guy. Like, he's 21, he's young, but I think that's what he'll end up being at 35 goals every year, 35 to 40, and gets you 90 points. I think that is the skill set, the size, the drive. I compared him to Rick Nash a lot. I think that's a Rick Nash in making. Rick Nash was a pretty darn good hockey player with Columbus and the Rangers, and I think Quinn Byfield is that guy. So could you say 10, 11 million is warranted? And maybe it's on a one-year deal, like the Carolina Hurricanes did to Jesperi Kotkaniemi. They went really high on the one-year deal and kind of saying, hey, let's see how it pans out. Maybe we drop you down afterwards, where the average over a longer period of time is going to be lower. But to get him out, maybe you have to go $11 million on one-year deal.
Also an interesting take, which you always bring to the table. I think it's fascinating to think of him at 11.4, knowing full well that in very, very, very short order, we're going to have a half dozen or more players in the league making 14 to 15 million.
Yes.
And then you're going to go, oh, he's 4 million less than the top players. But
he's two-thirds of their salaries. Huh? That's 66 cents.
But if
on the
you
dollar.
Believe in all the everything that Byfield is, which at his best is beautiful in this game right now, and only growing and growing and growing into more of an impactful player, holy cow, like this there's ways to justify it in the concept of team building. There really is. I mean,
well, he had 55 points.
Maybe the Sharks or the Ducks, if they really want to heat up the freeway faceoff, should consider doing this.
Yes. If Anaheim wanted to just throw a wrench into the LA Kings and make it where, you know, like I was on my soapbox last year and I said, hey, let's throw a wrench in the Boston Bruins plan and offer sheet, you know, Jeremy Swayman. I think that's where it gets more fun. That's where we have a week worth of talking if the Anaheim Ducks are going to offer sheet Quinn Byfield, and then they have 48 hours to accept or not accept. I mean, that would be fun.
We got a few minutes before we break for Shayna. As far as the others on your short list that you would consider offer sheeting.
So funny enough, when you go to Puckpedia and you say, hey, who's available now for RFAs? The number one guy in points last season with RFAs is Lucas Raymond. Lucas Raymond at 72 points, 31 goals. I'm not intrigued with Lucas Raymond. I'm not enthralled with Lucas Raymond. I think he's a good hockey player, but I don't think he's an offer sheet guy for me. Seth Jarvis, 22-year-old with the Carolina Hurricanes, I think is a guy that could definitely be one that you say, hey, we're going to throw a lot of money at him.
Like number one on my list.
He's number one on your list. Yeah. And then do you want to go at 11.4 again, right underneath that threshold? So it's not four first.
I would
rounders?
Go 9.1.
9.1, just a first, second, and third. I think Carolina, which they have about 9 million under the cap right now, probably could swing it. But
they'll never let him go. You'd have to go over 11, I think, for it to be problematic for Carolina. I really do.
Okay. And there's my third guy, because I have three guys on my list. And this is an interesting one because I don't know where the money would be, where the team would let him go, but it's Dawson Mercer. He's 22 years old.
Now, are you thinking of this from a Buffalo and reuniting with Lindy Ruff standpoint, or is this still anybody's idea?
I'm thinking of him as a Marty Biron point of view, because I have loved Dawson Mercer from the day I saw him
last year. Yeah. He was a little off last year.
A little off, but still got 20 goals, right?
Yeah, but that's still, you know.
But he plays. I remember seeing him at Prospect Challenge, the rookie tournament, right, with the New Jersey Devils. I'm like, oh, that guy. Like, I love him. Love the way he plays. He gave everything he had. Yep. So I would say, for the years that we've talked about the Miles Wood, right, and those type of Jake DeBrusk. I love a Jake DeBrusk because the way he plays. I think Dawson Mercer's kind of the same way.
What about
that he can score?
What about Matty Beniers?
Matty Beniers is interesting, but I think Seattle is not letting him go. I think.
What
Seattle,
about Arber Jacki?
I think Arber Jacki I would trade for because I think the Montreal Canadiens would rather, like, you wouldn't have to, you know, elevate the salary so much that you're handcuffing you. I thought about Arber Jacki again because I'm like, Jacki, we saw him at Prospect Challenge. I'm like, hey, this guy knocked out the, you know, couple teeth of this Ottawa guy in a fight. I was like, and the hits and everything. But I think it's a trade more for Jacki. Matty Beniers, yes, I put him on my list and I crossed him off right away. I'm like, that's not happening. I could dream, but you're rainbows and unicorns. That's not happening.
Don't forget the jujubes because it would be a cause for celebration if we actually get to talk about an offer sheet this summer.
Yes.
What we can talk about definitively are half-season memberships for the Sabres. 21 game plans. They're available now. Per game pricing starts at just $29. Pick the plan that's got the games and matchups that excite you the most and head to sabres.com/join to get involved and we'll see you at the rink, KeyBank Center, when the home opener comes around on October the 10th. Shayna Goldman from The Athletic is next on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Multi-sport star Shayna Goldman. She is with us here from The Athletic, New York Times, Sportsnet, and of course, right here on MSG. Great to have you back, Shayna. How are you? How's summer?
You know, it's summering. It's nice to have a pause from hockey. I think I'm in the lone crown that's like, this is kind of nice because now I just get to focus on tennis.
Yes, of which there is plenty going on at Wimbledon. We won't spoil it for everybody else at this point in time. But what you did very, very, very recently write about in the NHL is of great interest, and we won't exhaust the entire piece, but what is your gut telling you on the future, Leon Draisaitl in Edmonton?
It's so interesting because I feel like he gets such a bad rap for like how he talks to the media and, you know, like Leon Draisaitl's so pissy, but you look at it and I always wonder with a player like that, like, would he want to be a number one elsewhere? And I think it's a question that other dynamic duos you faced, right? Do you take your best shot of winning a cup by being the number two to someone? And if that number one is McDavid, like, you're not going to find much better, right? It's a little bit different than, say, being the Mitch Marner to an Austin Matthews, I would say. But do you take that route or do you look at it and say, you know what, the best bet is to bet on yourself and try it somewhere else? So it's interesting when you look back at the history of other number twos, what they did, and try to predict what Draisaitl might do next, because it feels like this is going to be decided sooner than later.
But your gut tells you what? Is he going to stay or go?
I think he's going to stay because you look at it, it's so rare that a number two actually does leave. Usually what happens is if they leave, the number one is gone first. You look at Messier leaving the Oilers, Gretzky left first, and you go through all different examples, and that generally is the case. So I kind of feel like it's McDavid's move, you know, to decide Draisaitl's future. If one goes, both are out. That's my vibe personally.
13.5, 14. Where do you set the over-under when the dollars would have to come in for an extension for Draisaitl? And is it the summer or do they wait until in season to get it done?
I think they try to get it done this summer. The whole hurdle of all this is that they don't have a general manager right now. But the way that they're
he's
building,
done a pretty good job, though. The interim president, GM, Jeff Jackson, has done a good job.
Their offseason so far, you're looking at it, you're going, this could be one of the best Oilers teams yet. And I think we've said that each of the last 3 years. So maybe this is actually it. The dollars, I think, the problem is he was so underpaid on his last deal that you might have to overcorrect now. And you don't want to do that for a contract that's starting at age 30. I think he could ask for 14 and start there. I think the Oilers, if they're lucky, push him down to 13.5. And he'd still be one of the highest paid players in the league until McDavid's next contract. But I think that's kind of the sacrifice you have to make. And 13.5 is still pretty good, even if it's not 14.
your colleague, everyone's friend, Dom at The Athletic, did the most improved piece very recently. Now, the Oilers were kind of smack dab in the middle there. And, of course, the obvious caveat is when you go to the Stanley Cup final, you don't have a lot of improving to do. So it's not like you're going to have a massive overhaul. So they're in the middle of the pack. The Sabres were top 10 as far as his view of offseason improvements. How do you look at the Sabres and what they've done and whether that, you know, your opinion is similar to Dom's and or most importantly, where you see them right now and what may they still need to do?
I think the Ryan McLeod trade is so interesting because it's one of those trades I feel like everyone wants to have a super quick take on, and I don't think you can in this case because it makes sense for both teams right now, right? Because the Sabres, one of the biggest needs was a 3C since they lost Casey Mittelstadt. They need someone there, and Ryan McLeod can be that. The big question is, what does he look like without, you know, Draisaitl and McDavid ahead of him? It's a totally different look for him. And on the flip side, the Oilers need future talent as much as possible. They don't have a ton of picks and prospects. So I look at that, and I think it added this new wave into how we view the Sabres offseason, because if you go, you know, through free agency day, you could say they're definitely not a winner of free agency day, right? Like, I think that's fair to say, but I think you could also look at it and say, should they have been where they are right now? They're one of the youngest teams in the league, right? Are you the team that should be going after those 29-year-olds in free agency and potentially overpaying, giving yourself issues down the line, which we've seen teams do in the past, that it felt unfinished? And if the McLeod trade is an indication of what's to come and they're going to start making moves on the trade front to keep improving, then I think they just got this encouraging twist to an otherwise just okay offseason.
Do you still think, and you said one of the youngest team, do you still see the Sabres as a young team? Because I sure don't. And Bleacher Report had their list of the five youngest and five oldest, and the Sabres were the youngest in the NHL according to their data and their age. I don't see the Sabres as a young team anymore. Am I wrong to look at it that way, or is the number still the number?
The number is still the number, but I think the difference is they have these players that have been there for so long at this point, right? Like, Dahlin has been there 4 years, and he's still one of those younger players around the league. He's a young number one defenseman. So I think that kind of, like, might skew the view of it a little bit. Their goaltending crease is really young. The other part of it is you're looking at teams that you think of as young. You're going to think of the rebuilding teams, right? And obviously, yeah, you think of the Anaheim Ducks, and they have a lot of young stars. But look at the Blackhawks and look at the Sharks and look at the veterans that they're bringing in to balance out the young guys. Guys like Nick Foligno in Chicago are going to weigh their average age down. Having Vlasic still in San Jose is going to do the same for the Sharks. So I think that's why we see the Sabres rise up the list maybe a little bit more than expected, because they don't have as many of those older guys on the books at this point.
They used to when they had obviously Kyle and Craig Anderson and whatever, but it's still, they were one of the youngest because that group was so young. But at Dylan Cousins at 23, I'm like, guy's not a young NHL player anymore. Like, you can't think of him as young. And Quinn and Paterka, they're not young anymore. Let's, like, even
23 is young. Stop it. No.
Well, those guys are young.
We went on this
entry level.
Yeah. We said 30 was old and you're dead at 30. And remember, like, all that last year, now we're bringing that age down to 23. I am putting a stop to this right now.
Well, did you agree with Dom's list? I mean, his top three as far as most improved, and granted, you have to recognize the situation, Chicago, New Jersey, Washington. So Chicago, we know where they were, so it wouldn't be hard to improve. New Jersey shouldn't have been where they ended up, but it was just a year that got away. And Washington surprised everybody and made the playoffs with the roster that they had and still went out and did a lot. So who do you view as the most improved?
Yeah, the Blackhawks, the bar was so low last year. So I definitely think they're up there, right? Bertuzzi is great. I think Teravainen is going to be a very good fit. Even guys like TJ Brody, like, there's a lot of players going in. So it's not going to be, it's going to be the Connor Bedard show and some guys instead of just the Connor Bedard show. It's a little bit different, so I think that helps. And the Devils, too. Like, the goaltending is the game changer right here, but two big ads on defense, right? These were, Brett Pesce was someone you knew a lot of teams were going to be after. The Capitals, too. I really like their offseason because when their season ended, you look at that and you go, where are they going to go from here? You're stuck in limbo. And it was a really tricky situation. I think that they made some really cost-effective moves. Like, I like Mangiapane as a bounce-back candidate. I love the Matt Roy signing. And I think Logan Thompson's a good add. The only team that I wondered if maybe they could push to the top three, would have been Utah, because I think they made such a splash on defense. But then again, it's hard to like kind of compartmentalize the Coyote season last year, because before all the news broke that they were moving and everything hit the fan, they were having a really solid season, and they have all this young skill there. So I guess it's not as big of a leap forward, but it feels like they've completed their roster more than a lot of other teams did.
Okay. Duffer and I discussed offer sheets in the first segment of the show today. It's news dump type of day on Friday, so we're dumping the offer sheet, the news out here. I have three players on my list. So I'm going to ask you, and I'll put a number attached to what maybe it would take to get it done. Quinton Byfield at $10.5 million, Seth Jarvis at 10, or Dawson Mercer at $7 million. Which one would you say fits better, the number? And which one would you say, I'm not going that high on this guy?
Fits better the number is Seth Jarvis. To me, that is a superstar player. He has shown his offensive skill the last couple of years, and last year was showing he can keep up in a Selke caliber capacity. Yes, he played with Jordan Stahl for a lot of the year, so we're cheating a little bit. And when you watch the video of the two of them to try to decipher who was the leader of the group, it was Stahl in the corners a lot of the time, and then Jarvis with the jump to get it out of the zone. But that still counts, and that's still a huge step for him. I think he is a player that if you sign for $10 million, you're going to feel very good about it. It's high now, but I think he'll live up to that in the near future. The number that would scare me the most is Byfield, because I do want to see what he can do in a true top six center capacity. And I think we saw him thrive a lot on the wing this year when he was playing with Kempe and Kopitar, and that's really great and wonderful, right? How many centers credit a shift to the wing to help their game? I want to see him at his natural position before I say 10.5, because to me, that feels like center money.
Agreed.
And Dawson Mercer? Seven.
I like seven for him. I think he feels like a bridge deal candidate right now, and it's because of the Devils situation. I think it makes a lot of sense, and it's really tricky because when you go through last year, you're like, well, you couldn't shake it on the top six wings, so you got moved to the third line. You couldn't shake it as 3C, which is really disappointing, so you had to be a winger to Arikala. But I don't think he got enough like prime minutes with guys like Nico Hischier, who we knew he thrives with. So I don't think we can completely wipe last year off the board, but I think we have to really take it in stride and kind of go back to the full career to this point, which is really encouraging. And I think he brings the skills that the Devils are missing. So if they were to sign him for $7 million, I think they'd feel pretty good about it if they had the space.
Yeah, I can definitely see a bridge here in Mercer's situation. You don't think anything? Do you think anything's going to happen offer sheet wise?
I wish, but like the NHL. They just...
You never know.
It's like anytime we get an offer sheet, then everyone gets super petty, and it's like, you're not supposed to do that. Even though everybody like can cut corners in every which way. This is why I think, honestly, everyone gets so mad about LTIR and things like that, because nobody wants to step on each other's toes when it's like, listen, this is a business. I feel like NHL teams have been getting this constant wake-up call that the NHL is actually a business. Like the whole cap-friendly thing started that conversation, who has a cap infrastructure. And you need to do things to have a competitive edge. If that means sending out an offer sheet, that's what you should be doing.
Mm-hmm. Your friend Sarah Siv put an article, the five dramatic storylines of the summer, and number five was Jacob Trouba and the Rangers. And I saw some wording on social media, maybe Sabres could be a team that he would open his eyes to because the proximity to New York. I think his wife has another year left to her residency, so she's a doctor, so don't want to go too far if he has to move. Is Jacob Trouba a candidate to be moved, and would the Sabres be a good fit, knowing that I feel like the top six is pretty much settled now for the Sabres?
It's a tough one because their top six is settled, and that's a lot of money to take on. And even if you get retention, like, it's still a pricey contract. Do I think it's the worst move necessarily? No, he's a right-handed defenseman. They could use that. They have a million lefties. but that whole situation is just so convoluted. And I think the way it's been talked about is so messy that it's like everybody wants to point fingers and place blame with that, with his clauses and how he's handled it, when that's in his right. Like, I feel like people need to remember, like, general managers sign these contracts and players would be fools to say no to them. But if he does get moved, I'm going to be really interested to see who like perks up and takes interest in him, because he's coming off one of his worst off seasons yet. But I keep thinking, like, I wonder if there's maybe a different vibe that can help him get back to his strengths of the Winnipeg days. because he's been such a different player since he's come to the Rangers. And that foundation, I wonder if it's there somewhere.
You didn't, you're, so you haven't liked the entirety of his work with the Rangers?
There's been good and bad. Like, the first season was pretty bad, and then the second season was good, but it was, like, relative to that first season. I feel like that's been okay. The scale, you know, but it hasn't been relative to his entire body. Mm-hmm. I think that he is a capable shutdown defenseman. Like, this year he was passable in matchup minutes with Keandre Miller. Do I think he should be playing those? Probably not. And I think we saw him get maximized in a third pair role, but then you keep going back to the shouldn't $8 million defenseman be there? And you don't want to have that conversation, but it's like, it's logical to have it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Would you make the trade by wanting some other piece on the Rangers? Saying, okay, we'll take Trouba, but we have to get this guy because we're taking $8 million off your hands. Is there an added sweetener you'd like to put in if you're asking for Trouba?
I mean, if you're another team, you should be asking for like a Brenneth Hoffman or something like that, but I don't think anyone's going to ever get that. But that can be your starting point. One of those young players. But I would push for salary retention, if anything, honestly. I would say mm-hmm. retain 50%, you get Trouba as a $4 million defenseman, and I think he could be very capable in that role. That would be my move. I think your better weapon at this point is just maximizing cap space. I know the cap's gone up a lot, but you still want to have as much flexibility as possible.
We haven't done full season, off-season overviews of all teams. We still have, obviously, many, many, many weeks before the season begins, so in time we will get there. I know Marty was thrilled with what Nashville did. I know what you said about Steven Stamkos a lot last year. I'm curious what you think of the Predators' big free agent day.
Okay. I understand why the Lightning did what they did, right? If I'm in Tampa Bay's shoes and you need to extend your window, I'm going for Jake Guentzel over Steven Stamkos. Having said that, if I'm in Nashville's shoes, which is totally different from the Lightning, I love it for them. I felt like their last offseason was a little directionless, but I was interested because I liked a lot of Trotz's philosophies. But this year, I like that he's just saying, you know what? Here are good players. Here are character guys, because it feels like both are being weighed. Why not? Because you have Forsberg, you have Yossi, and now you gave Saros that extension that I feel like you have to do something. I am very here for the Barry Trotz era. I think everybody is getting very pumped about it. And I feel like he's going to be like a shoo-in for the Jim Gregory Award just because he's like the buzzy name we all are watching.
Good.
Yeah, I know we got to take a break, but this or that, the Pimm's Cup at Wimbledon or the Honey Deuces at US Open?
Oof. Pimm's Cup is absolutely fantastic. Love it, but nothing replaces the Honey Deuce.
Okay. I think more alcohol in the Honey Deuces too. So
the irreplaceable Shayna Goldman, our Friday staple. Thank you, Shayna. Enjoy the weekend and the finale of Wimbledon.
Thanks for having me.
We're back after this on Sabres Live.
Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
It finally happened, Marty. I've run out of things to say. You've got 80 seconds. You've got 80 seconds all on your own here.
80 Have seconds fun. All on my own. This is going to be tough. I'll say this. I know we talked about offer sheet, and I love this point by Jake here, one of our regular listeners. He says, I don't care about actually getting the player. It should be as much about putting the squeeze on the other teams and bumping their cap in and hurting them and playing that game, right? So,
but what if they squeeze back?
But that's what it is, Jake, is because if you squeeze and squeeze and squeeze, somebody's going to squeeze you back. And the Sabres are in a position with all their young players that there's a lot to be squeezed right there. So I like the strategy. I like to go after other teams, you know, put the squeeze on them, put them in a tough position. Yes, absolutely. But there's a real point of it of saying, I like that player and I want to get that player for my team. That's what I think the initial thought should always be.
Yeah. Give 716 Day is coming up very quickly. Yes. We'll have a little kickoff party on Monday, late afternoon, early evening, and Tuesday will be a big day for that. Danny Gare's golf tournament happens at the end of next week.
Yes.
And you're going to be free of me a couple of days next week. Are you excited?
Hey, a short week for you, a shorter week for all of us.
And a great weekend ahead for everyone, I hope. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you soon.
Presented. by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
It finally happened, Marty. I've run out of things to say. You've got 80 seconds. You've got 80 seconds all on your own here.
80 seconds all on my own. This is going to be tough. I'll say this. I know we talked about offer sheet, and I love this point by Jake here, one of our regular listeners. He says, I don't care about actually getting the player. It should be as much about putting the squeeze on the other teams and bumping their cap in and hurting them and playing that game, right? So, but
what if they squeeze back?
But that's what it is, Jake, is because if you squeeze and squeeze and squeeze, somebody's going to squeeze you back. And the Sabres are in a position with all their young players that there's a lot to be squeezed right there. So I like the strategy. I like to go after other teams, you know, put the squeeze on them, put them in a tough position. Yes, absolutely. But there's a real point of it of saying, I like that player and I want to get that player for my team. That's what I think the initial thought should always be.
Yeah. Give 716 Day is coming up very quickly. Yes. We'll have a little kickoff party on Monday, late afternoon, early evening, and Tuesday will be a big day for that. Danny Gare's golf tournament happens at the end of next week.
Yes.
And you're going to be free of me a couple of days next week. Are you excited?
Hey, a short week for you, a shorter week for all of us.
And a great weekend ahead for everyone, I hope. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you soon.